Today on Seculo, Secretary of State Tony Blinken will testify on Afghanistan. What questions should he be asked? We'll talk about that and more today on Seculo.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo.
We expect lawmakers to press Secretary Blinken on how many American citizens and Afghan allies remain in Afghanistan.
We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110.
Lawmakers will want answers on the decision to pull troops out by the August 31st deadline, despite Americans being left behind. They're also expected to ask why the U.S. failed to heed warnings from some in the intelligence community predicting the Taliban's rapid takeover.
And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hi, welcome to Seculo. We are going to take your phone call today right at the bat, 1-800-684-3110, because the hearings, there's going to be two hearings, one today at 2 p.m. Eastern time and then again tomorrow. The first hearing is before the House Foreign Affairs Committee. That's chaired by Congressman Meeks. And then tomorrow, the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee, which is chaired by Senator Menendez. So, of course, you've got Democrats chairing both, but Republicans are on the committee, so they'll have their opportunity to ask questions. What I pose to you as we begin the discussion today, and I think these are very important hearings to finally put the feet to the fire, hopefully, of these administration officials, and specifically here, the State Department's role or lack of role in being able to get Americans and the Afghan special immigrant visa holders and people like that out before, including their State Department staff, before this complete withdrawal. So, you know, those kind of questions should be asked, should be explained. I expect some of it to be heated, but we also always, you know, in Washington, we put that, these were members of Congress that a couple of weeks ago, I'm talking about on the Democrat side more, a couple of weeks ago, sound like they'd be pretty tough in a hearing like this. It remains to be seen if their rhetoric and their tone has completely shifted over the last couple of weeks, as they don't really want the American people focused on this as a party. So we will see kind of, do they do the right thing as Americans and ask the tough questions? And there's going to be two opportunities at it, one on the House side, one on the Senate side. That is going to be happening today. I mean, there's some questions I know that I would like asked. We'll get into that, but I also want to hear from you. If you want to give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. What would you want your member of Congress or in the House or the Senate over the next couple of days to ask Secretary of State Blinken about the Afghan withdrawal? What would you want asked? What questions? Maybe your military family, or veteran yourself of that the Afghanistan conflict. Give us a call at 1-800-684-3110, or you can put your questions in on social media, Facebook, YouTube, Periscope, Rumble, wherever you're watching on it, even on Instagram, you get your questions in that way. But if you want to get on the show, I'm telling you, the time to call is now, so we can get you ready and get those questions going and analyze that for you. 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on air. That's 1-800-684-3110. I'll just give you a preview. One of mine that I want asked immediately is why, and Rick Rennell wrote about this in a piece last week at ACLJ.org, answer why Secretary Blinken was silent when President Biden pulled the 2,500 troops, U.S. troops, 5,000 NATO troops from war-torn Afghanistan that we knew was going to be taken over by the Taliban, even at their best estimates around now the Taliban would be taking over. And why was that done before evacuating State Department employees? So just a basic question like that to start off the hearing. Why didn't you speak up? Did you speak up? Did you express concern for those employees? Your questions, your thoughts, what would you ask Secretary Blinken? 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on air. That's 1-800-684-3110. We'll go to the team as well to get their thoughts on Secretary Blinken. There's also a move already, and we'll get into this, by China, surprise, surprise, Pakistan, Russia not far behind either, already giving direct aid to the Taliban, already working to utilize Afghanistan as a partner. In the last 20 years, there was no role for them. They're already there, already making an impact. Those are things you would ask Secretary Blinken about, well as his role as Secretary of State. So I encourage you to get involved in the show today. Got a couple phone lines open still, 1-800-684-3110. What would you ask Secretary Blinken, or have your member of Congress ask Secretary Blinken? We will be right back on Seculo. Make sure if you're watching online, share it with your friends and family.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Secular, we're taking your phone calls. Phone lines are busy right now, but if you want to get on the air, 1-800-684-3110. And I want to get to those quickly, but first I want to go around to our team, and then we'll start getting your thoughts as well. Let me go to Than in Washington, D.C. Than, just right off the bat, with Secretary Blinken's testimony and two kind of opportunities to question him, so even the senators will be able to see what he kind of answered today and what gaps there may be. To answer tomorrow. What do you think the tone is going to be like in this hearing? I mean, if it was 2 weeks ago, it felt like everybody was going to be angry and kind of aggressive towards Blinken. But I just wonder now if things have changed enough where the Democrats on the committee are going to try to keep this calm. And even if they've got tough questions, not be quite as aggressive as they all sounded when this failed withdrawal began.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen, Jordan. I mean, look, I think it'll be sober. I think it'll be a somber tone, but I don't think it'll be overly aggressive when Democrats are questioning. I mean, first of all, just a couple of atmospherics. I mean, the House Foreign Affairs Committee, which is the one that is up today, Jordan, this is a huge committee, 51 members. Democrats hold a three-seat majority. Tomorrow's hearing, which will happen in the morning, so maybe we'll have some of that sound by the time we go to air. That's a smaller committee, 22 senators, evenly divided between Republicans and senators. So you might be able to get a little bit deeper in the weeds on that one. Today's round of questioning, Jordan, will probably move rather quickly. I hope they do get deep into some of the weeds, though. I mean, I totally agree with the questions that you talked about timeline. Why did America turn their back on leaving no person behind? But maybe a couple other questions I would pose to you, Jordan, questions that we asked in our Freedom of Information Act request. Why did you cancel the Crisis Response Bureau? Because remember, it was the State Department that was responsible for making that cancellation. And then second, Jordan, I really hope somebody pushes the secretary on how far up the ladder did that dissent cable go. You've talked about this a lot, but the people inside the department who disagreed with the tactic, we know it got to the secretary's desk. I want him to answer, did I read it? Did I understand it thoroughly? Did I understand the gravity of it? And Jordan, who ultimately did I share it with? I think he should answer the question, did you make the president of the United States aware of this cable?
These were Harry diplomats that were saying, you know, this withdrawal is not right. We've got to change the pace here. We're not ready. The Taliban is too strong. I think there were at least 23 State Department officials who signed on to this in the confidential reporting channel when they disagree. And as Than brought up, that is Secretary Blinken. He was asked about a press conference when we found out about it. He said those are generally reviewed by him. What we don't know, he didn't answer, is if he shared it with the administration officials. But what else would you want asked right off the bat here in this hearing?
Well, I think your list and Than's list are a great start. But in addition, I would like the Secretary of State to explain whether he believes there was indeed an intelligence failure, or on the other hand, was there a failure of will by the Biden administration to leave no American behind? He also needs to explain his rationale for not opposing the Bagram Air Force decision, basically to close that Air Force base before withdrawing, or better said, surrendering to the Taliban. In addition to all of that, of course, we need to know how many Afghanis were admitted to the United States without vetting for security purposes and without vetting for purposes of COVID infections. So there are a raft of questions that need to be answered. And my big fear is that Secretary of State Blinken will engage in his usual duplicity and try not to answer questions directly. So I hope members of Congress will press him vigorously and demand real answers, and also demand access to cables and other information, which will either confirm Blinken's claims or perhaps basically suggest that he is fibbing once again.
Yeah, I want to go to this bite. This is from Representative Congressman Waltz on Fox News. Kind of give you an idea of what maybe not only we're going to hear, but sort of the rhetoric that may come up. I spent about an hour, 45 minutes or so with Representative Waltz for a new project we're working on. He's got a lot of great insights. He was there on the ground. He led the campaign to try to find and locate Bo Bergdahl during that whole situation, whether he liked it or not. You can find that in the documentary we're working on right now, the new series. Let's hear from Representative Waltz.
Biden and Blinken keep saying, well, we're going to judge by their actions. The Taliban are literally pulling out young boys and killing them so that no future generation can ever resist their rule. And they're really all partnered with Al-Qaeda. And Al-Qaeda is going to come roaring back. The intelligence is that on that is very clear.
Yeah, Representative Waltz's point of view, certainly, it may not even be a popular one, but is one that not only is Islamic terror in general going to have a huge rise, but also that we're going to have to go back in. This is just delaying the inevitable. And he definitely was one of the people who did not suggest the full pullout of Afghanistan. So you have a myriad of different people with different points of views, but you can't help but sympathize a little bit with how his opinion is right now. Let's go to phone calls, though. Yep. Let's go to Marissa, who's calling in Washington on line 3. Marissa, you're on the air.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Marissa.
My question is, what is China's role in the Afghanistan withdrawal?
So we are already seeing, Harry, the Chinese as well as the Pakistanis moving quickly to what they're calling relief, but they're directly funding the Taliban with aid. So they have taken a role that we haven't seen China take in two decades while we've been in Afghanistan. It's also opened the door for the Russians as well. But they're saying, kind of regardless of everything else going on, we're going to work directly with the Taliban. We got no problem working directly with the Taliban. And I think what they see this as an opportunity to take a lot of U.S. assets that were left behind there. Not just the equipment, but also the infrastructure that was built, and utilize it to their advantage. I mean, that's what they're all about, is utilizing it to their economic advantage, ultimately.
I think that's correct. And they are already planning a road into Afghanistan, which will be useful for purposes of trade. But it's very, very important to keep in mind that the Afghanis have been working with Pakistan, and Pakistan is a strong friend of China. So essentially, China, after they finish their celebration over the American defeat in Afghanistan, will have a willing partner, both with respect to the Taliban, but also with respect to Pakistan, which can now extend its influence deeper into Afghanistan. And I think at the end of the day, this may ultimately improve relationships between China and Iran, which is close by. So I think at the end of the day, this is a huge loss for the American people strategically and tactically. I think this is a huge win for China, and they may indeed have greater access down the road to minerals and other resources, which will strengthen their control of the world economy and increase American dependence on China. So I think at the end of the day, the State Department and the Biden administration, they blew it. They don't seem to understand political events very, very well.
And Marissa, I would point you to this. This is the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson. Now you're getting the translation here. Take a listen.
China attaches importance to the Taliban's announcement of the establishment of an interim government and some important personnel arrangements, which has put an end to a three-week anarchy state in Afghanistan and is an essential step for Afghanistan's restoration of domestic order and post-war reconstruction.
So there you go. They want to get in there to be part of the restoration of domestic order, post-war reconstruction. Than that's money. That's money. So this is another question for that would line up, because I think what's important for members of Congress today and tomorrow is not to ask him questions that he's not the best person to respond to. So if it's a very military focused, he's going to keep pushing that to the Pentagon. But this question on diplomacy of countries coming in like China, like Russia, like Pakistan, that's right in line with him, with what he should be able to respond to.
It's a great point, Jordan. And the funding question, too, a lot of that flows through the State Department as well. He would have control over that. Look, I would say to Marissa, there's no doubt that China is trying to fill the void. I mean, we said that they would. Of course they would. Of course they would seek leverage. And this goes back to something that we heard from Jen Psaki, Jordan, where she was asked, you know, how are we going to keep leverage in there? She said, well, we have foreign aid. Well, Jordan, I mean, the status quo is we were the protectors of Afghanistan. We were not giving foreign aid. That is actually a proactive grant. That was one of the three main requests that the Taliban had. So, Jordan, I go back to Harry's point. This is the opposite of understanding how this works. That's giving the Taliban what they want. And Secretary Blinken is absolutely the correct person to answer that question.
All right, folks, we come back. Take more of your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Just a couple lines open. If you're holding on the line, we get to those calls, too. A lot of great questions. The question is simple. Is what would you want asked of our Secretary of State today and tomorrow in these hearings on Afghanistan? We'll be right back on Seculum.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
So this is breaking now. A reporter, this could make things very interesting tomorrow. So Republican staff, I'm assuming that's staff on the committees, have an audio recording of Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, at a Hamptons gathering the weekend that Kabul fell to the Taliban. In the recording, Blinken is heard making several disparaging comments about the most senior members of the Biden administration. Now, Than, I'll go right to you on this. They've got to back this up. You put this kind of news out. Of course, you've got to back up that this is real and that that the audio is clear enough and that what he's saying about the people. But if this is true, that the Secretary of State was basically putting the blame elsewhere while allowing his staff and team to be put in harm's way, this would be game changing. This is you don't. We wait for these kind of, it's like a movie. This may be like one of those situations. It's just now breaking.
Well, he's also got to shoot the Congress straight, Jordan. I mean, if he did tell any group of supporters one thing and then goes in front of Congress tomorrow and says something different, that would be a major problem for him. And look, it's not about embarrassing certain members of the administration. It's about doing the duty, the sacred duty of both the commander-in-chief and the secretary of state. Look, Secretary Blinken can't override President Obama as far as withdrawing troops from Afghanistan. But, Jordan, he absolutely has an obligation to make sure that those decisions don't negatively impact his embassy staff or threaten their lives. He absolutely has an obligation to go into the West Wing and tell the President of the United States, look, the decision that you are making very well could cost me the lives of the people who are under my control. So, you know, I don't know what was said at this East Hampton gathering, but Jordan, he sure better be consistent in his testimony both today and tomorrow with whatever he told that gathering.
It'll be interesting to see. Look, I'm not even that shocked. I think before Afghanistan, Secretary Blinken was largely kind of moderately accepted, wasn't necessarily known as someone who was universally failing at his job. You kind of looked at him and go, okay, well, maybe there's some rational people here. Obviously, a lot of that changed with their response to Afghanistan, but I wouldn't be shocked if he starts saying, hey, this wasn't me. Now, what can that mean for his job? That's another story. Let's take some phone calls. Speaking of something like this, let's go to Erla in Oregon on line one. I think she has a comment that a lot of people probably have.
Yep.
Erla, welcome.
Hi. My comment and question was, how are we going to believe anything Blinken says and just what you guys were talking about? And if he is found to be lying, what will be the consequences to him?
Well, he's under oath, yeah, so there's consequences for lying, but they're pretty careful about, and I understand your whole tone of voice, why trust any of this? Because oftentimes, we'll see if he does this kind of performance where he really never says anything, Harry. I mean, this is he's got kind of two options here. Lay it out, maybe talk about some of the discussions that he may have disagreed with, protect himself some, or he's going to just play the line of the administration and just not answer things that they don't want to.
I think your analysis is absolutely correct, and I also would throw out a further option, which is perhaps the Democrats will seek to postpone the hearing, and so then they can throw a little fog or shade on the American people with respect to Blinken's comments, if indeed they are validly being reported. But I also think he is sufficiently skillful enough to basically engage in duplicity without directly lying. And I think at the end of the day, that's what the Biden administration is counting on.
You know, Logan, I think that it's one of those opportunities where people, again, if there's this information that kind of changes the way he was talking, that's one thing. But if that doesn't exist, if that's not played, if they don't utilize it.
We've heard a lot of this in Washington before, where things get built up and then it's a whole lot of nothing.
Right.
So I'm not going to put too much stock in it, but it will be interesting to see. Look, the fact that we're getting this testimony, this hearing essentially, this soon after a crisis, it's actually kind of impressive. You know, we actually get to have some answers. Like you said, can he dodge questions? Of course, this is Washington. They're going to dodge whatever they don't want to reveal. There are plenty of things he doesn't have to say. But let's see how it plays out. I find it interesting that we're even able to have this, that you'll be able to flip on TV, watch this, know what's happening. It's kind of an interesting time to be in, I'm sure, to be in Washington and to see what's happening. I've been doing an ongoing series on the situation in Afghanistan. We've interviewed some great people, including people on our staff. including people like Rick Grenell, Mike Pompeo, and Colonel Smith, but also people like Representative Waltz. We're doing another one this afternoon with Lankford. You have people's genuine passion and thoughts right now where people are still emotional, people are still hot from the moment, and I think it's important to capture that. And hopefully something like this today with Secretary Blinken, we can, you know, it's very fresh in our minds, where if you got 2 years down the road or a year down the road or even 6 months down the road, you'd kind of start, you start the healing process, if you will. I think it's important to capture this kind of emotion, hopefully coming from our representatives.
All right, folks, you can still get your questions in, too. 1-800-684-3110, what you would like Secretary Blinken to ask. We'll take one more of those before this break. But one I want to know specifically is why he did not make sure that all of the specific State Department staff were evacuated before we shut down Bagram, before we shut down other avenues. Why didn't we just get them all evacuated? Why? It can't be because, well, they didn't think the Taliban was coming. They knew the Taliban was coming. Their best estimate was 90 days, but that was their best estimate. And they saw before, you know, there was time to make corrections to the plan well before the Taliban had taken Kabul. But you had to be flexible. You had to be willing to be flexible. It didn't seem like there was a lot of flexibility when it came to the Biden administration. This, they were stuck to their what they were going to do. This is how we'll play it to the media. This is how we'll play it to the American people. And we'll just let the cards fall, hoping that you just kind of move on from this. This is one of those opportunities where you say, hold on, we're not going to let you just move on. We're going to pay attention to what the Secretary of State says in this testimony. I think that's important.
Yeah, you know, Bagram getting shut down, a place that's, a few hundred miles from China. You know, from the borders, I believe. It's crazy to see that kind of thing happen. Let's go ahead. Well, actually, we have 2 minutes. 2 minutes, we can take a quick call. Yep. Let's go to Aaron in Ohio on line 2. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hey, Aaron.
Hey, thanks, fellas. Appreciate your time. My question would be, and I know you made a comment earlier, this may kind of gravitate towards the military intelligence side of things, but with the suicide bomber that took out the 13 service members and injured, you know, a lot more, how can they then turn around and explain that they had the intel to not only know who planned that bombing, that suicide bombing attack, know where they were after the fact, and then be able to confirm that they got the guy, right? Okay. Well, there's all these rumors swarming around that incident, you know, that it was a family with children, and they're not really sure what this drone strike actually got. But how can you explain that you have that intel, that level of insight, and then turn around and say, we didn't know the Taliban was going to overtake Afghanistan this quickly?
Aaron, to comment on that, I interviewed Secretary Pompeo last week about this specifically, which was typically in this situation, a terror threat is uncovered, it is then publicized, and then that by that means thwarted, because a lot of times they won't even attempt it, because you've now publicized, we know this is happening, be warned. Problem is you had the Taliban, you have Al-Qaeda, and now in ISIS, you have these big terror threats there, and you didn't have the people anymore to stop it. So you had some of the intelligence, but you didn't have the ability to go in and take care of it. And you had a country and a people that are no longer scared of you.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, because your troops are not there. They were, again, being exposed. The second part of that I would say is that they're going to have to answer that question. Did they kill a family on accident?
Yeah.
And was that just a move to look like they had intel that they didn't have?
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo.
And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. Just to reset a little bit for you, second half hour, we're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. So far, great comments, great questions coming in from our audience. And the question for everybody that they're responding to is, what would they like to be answered by Secretary Blinken today or tomorrow, the first time he's under oath before these hearings, not just doing a press conference, not just making a statement? It looks like, Than, and if people want to call in, I know Trish is online, if people want to call in, they've got questions that they would want answered. Give us a call. Be on the broadcast today, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Than, we can't confirm some of this reporting about audio that may exist, but if that's the kind of the tone or positioning, it would appear then that Republicans are going into this with a more aggressive attitude, which I think is a good thing. I think they need to go in with an aggressive attitude because they're going to have to ask the same question 2, 3, or 4 times to try and get at the actual answer.
Yeah, both parties really should, Jordan. I mean, look, it almost doesn't matter if this audio exists or can be confirmed or not, because we know the facts on the ground are really horrific. We know we left Americans behind. We know we worked on a timeline that really deferred more to the Taliban's interest than whether or not we had accomplished the task that we had. We know that we closed Bagram Air Force down, Air Base down before we really were done using it. We know a lot of these things, Jordan, and the Secretary is directly responsible for a number of them. So, yes, if the audio is real, if the audio can be used, I think it'll be a more aggressive tone. But we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I hope that time passing doesn't diminish the intensity of both parties questioning on this. You got people like Senator Blumenthal who said that they were incredibly dismayed by some of the decisions made by the administration. Will his party push on that tomorrow? Jordan, I think it remains to be seen. I think there will be a temptation to give in to some of the distractions of the day. They're drafting that $3.5 trillion bill, right? Will they be more focused on that, or will they be aggressive with the Secretary?
All right, let's take it back to the phones. Let's go to Trish in Florida on line 6. Trish, welcome.
Welcome, and I appreciate the work you do. My question is, when I heard conflicting reports, did we disengage all that equipment that we left there? Did we leave it in working condition, or did we take some parts away from it?
So, I mean, this is, again, part of the disaster, and I think, Trish, the question that I think would be asked is, we all want to know that answer, Harry. Everybody wants to know, why was it left behind the way it does? It seems like some of it was not disassembled, especially the small arms were not. But he probably won't answer that because that's a military question, not a diplomatic question.
I think your answer is absolutely correct, Jordan. But I think it is clear from the evidence, at least that I've read, that we did leave fully functioning military equipment, including in some cases helicopters, behind. That's number one. Number two, we talked about China earlier. The Chinese government has probably already sent in its military experts to disassemble and to engage in reverse engineering on much of this equipment. And so they will probably be able to profit from the fact that we left tens of billions of dollars worth of equipment behind. More likely than not, what we should have done is we should have blown up the equipment if we could not get it out in time. But the Biden administration engaged in a craven decision to essentially exit Afghanistan as a form of surrender to the Taliban, with A, out getting all of our people out, B, without getting our military equipment out, and C, without getting Afghanis, who were very helpful to us in the past, out. So there are just tons and tons of problems with the way the Biden administration has acted in this entire disaster.
Listen, as Than said, this is when, you know, this is a question for the Secretary of Defense. They're going to have to testify too. And those kind of questions, the Department of Defense is going to have to answer. It was so obvious to reporters on the ground. It was obvious to people watching the Taliban with the equipment that all of it was not disabled. The Humvees, the small arms. We don't know about some of the aircraft yet, how what kind of condition that's in. We've seen them trying to utilize some of it, though, so some of it they took right up into the air. We come back, take more of your calls, comments, 1-800-684-3110. What do you want Blinken to have to answer to today?
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Secular, we are taking your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110. The question we've asked, and we've gotten great questions and comments from people, is what they would want Secretary Blinken to answer to today. He is testifying at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, House Foreign Affairs Committee, and then tomorrow the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee. The military leadership of the United States will also be testifying ultimately. So get your questions in, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. You know, BBC reporting, 20 civilians killed in Afghanistan because of fighting between the Taliban and some opposition forces. Communications have been cut. I mean, so while the BBC has evidence of these kind of attacks occurring with the Taliban, that they're not acting the way that maybe it's perceived, they can't get the info out. We talked about this, Logan, with one of the issues with Afghanistan was people were used to seeing everything. Even when that horrible bombing occurred, we had all these reporters at the airport. They've been cut down significantly. I mean, there are still some reporters there, but their ability to get the information out, especially if the Taliban is just playing decent, I wouldn't say nice, decent in Kabul, but then this is a huge country, and we're not realizing what's going on.
Right.
We're not seeing.
Right. It's moving off of the news. You're seeing it less and less. Now, things like today will hopefully bring more of a light to it. But also, I think people are feeling this pressure to move on. The media is into other topics. Look, we can say it with our own coverage. We know how many people watch and listen. Sometimes if something's breaking with Afghanistan, a lot of people watch. We also have seen it get a little less and less as time goes on, just purely as news media does move pretty rapidly. And as we head into the last quarter of the year, you obviously have different news stories and different wants and needs that people have. You still have COVID. You still have so many things that are breaking news. That's why we got to make sure we do keep our eye on the ball, though, and talk about what's happening in Afghanistan and what ends up happening for that entire region of the world, not just of Afghanistan, but what that relates to China, what that relates to Iran, how that takes place in Russia. It all, and obviously Israel, the Middle East, it all kind of can tie together very quickly if we're not careful and we're not keeping our eye on the ball. I think we saw that. And we saw the disaster that came upon the last few months of the Biden administration. You have seen major things. We talked about unification. We had Rick Grenell on last Friday. By the way, if you want a really good episode of this show, go watch that. It's a good one to keep yourself educated. But part of it was talking about whether there could be unification in this country. It's hard to see that. But there was at least some unification on people saying, what we're seeing in Afghanistan is disturbing and disgusting, and we're not just going to take it. People did respond. And they respond aggressively, as we do in America. You respond aggressively as a unit, and then you break apart, and slowly you move across. And like you said, today will be sort of that telltale sign. do the Democrats just protect their own, or do they actually have the hard-hitting questions?
It doesn't feel like a partisan battle.
Right, because if it's just like an impeachment trial, if it's just like a lot of these things that have happened recently, you're going to have it split. Nothing's going to get said. Nothing's going to happen. We're going to move on. Or do you actually have representation of the American people, which is what we ask for, and the fact that you can see the poll numbers, you can see the numbers of the way people are responding to this, you can see the chants going on around the world, you know, in relation to the administration. People want answers. American people are compassionate people. They are, even the conservatives, you know, the compassionate conservative, something that was obviously passed around a lot in the original Bush years. People are, as much as you want to see them as angry, you know, people on Twitter screaming and yelling, that's not the mass majority of people. We need to remember that that is the vocal minority. The most people are compassionate. They see what's happening around the world and they want answers. They don't want to be villainized, because the American people are quickly villainized when you do something like this, a 20-year war with, I've said this a lot in the documentary series that we're working on right now, is it's very hard to look back on a movie you watched and remember that you liked 95% of it, but the ending was terrible. And that's going to be the problem with this war, the war on terror. It's going to be very hard to remember that there was 20 years of really good, at least 10, of really good work that got done by our soldiers. We need to always remember that, because all that's going to be stuck in our mind is the very beginning of the war, 9/11, and then the very end,
yep,
which was this botched disaster. And we need to not forget the 20 years of good work that was done, 20 years of relative freedom that was given to the people of Afghanistan. It's really a shame to see it end this way. And you know, there are people going to be searching for answers for a long time.
Well, President Biden was in Pennsylvania, one of the 9/11 memorials in Shanksville where the flight went down. And he talked about the 20-year war. He talked about, but you know, he put it in a different way, Logan. Take a listen.
If you had told anybody that we were going to spend $300 million a day for 20 years to try to unite the country after we got bin Laden, after Al-Qaeda was wiped out there, can Al-Qaeda come back? Yeah, but guess what? It's already back other places. What's the strategy? Every place where Al-Qaeda is, we're going to invade and have troops stay there? Come on.
He goes with his come on, man. First of all, I love how they're concerned about money while they're asking for $3.5 trillion. That $300 million a day is very little for the federal government. If 2,000 U.S. troops who are not in horrific harm's way, which they were not the last 10 years, can work with NATO troops, and we don't have to worry about terrorism in our own soil. It took a decade to get to bin Laden,
yep,
to figure out the intel. That took, you know, half the time was just figuring out their networks to get to him. But yet, Harry, you know, this idea that it's about money, that's how he's pitching it. Right. And he's trying to pitch that to conservatives.
That's his narrative.
That's also a pitch to independent voters. 100%. And a lot of people, this is broadcast right now, is to try to put you off on the idea, well, this costs $300 million a day, as if he cares.
Yes, your analysis is spot on. So basically, it's a bait and switch approach by President Biden. He is pushing an initiative which would restructure so many areas of the country under this $3.5 trillion Green New Deal approach. And then he wants to restructure voting in the United States. He is now slamming the state of Texas with respect to abortion. And so it goes on and on. He is a person without principle, at least in my limited experience with him. And I think the American people should expect more unprincipled remarks by Joe Biden, because at his core, I think you will find a very, very empty suit. So at the end of the day, I think the American people should make their own decisions, but they should not rely on President Biden's analysis.
I want you to be part of the broadcast, 1-800-684-3110. That is the number you call. You still got time to do it. We got another segment coming up. If you've got questions you want answered by Secretary Blinken in these hearings about the Afghanistan withdrawal, give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Another question I have, you know, Than, this would go, again, right at the heart of something that Secretary Blinken would be responsible for, is what's going on with the vetting. Is it true that people are being pushed through and then we'll figure it out on the, quote, back end? We've got quotes like that. We've heard statements like that from the administration, from Blinken, and I think they got to be pushed on that, because we want to, First of all, I think there's a question about how many people did we leave behind that we were supposed to take out from that were Afghan. But two, everybody is concerned about the fact that we were just putting people on planes at that airport and not checking who they were just to, so that they could. It looks like they were doing that to inflate their numbers and then didn't really know who these people were.
Yeah, Jordan, I mean, and look, I think there's probably going to be a temptation for him to blame it on fog of war, blame it on chaos, and there would be some justification for that maybe if all of the flights went to interim locations. I mean, that was the whole point of those interim locations, like Ramstein Base in Germany, Jordan. But look, you have to follow the rules for refugee vetting for a number of reasons. Number one, and most paramount, is the security of the United States. You can't fly them into Dulles and then check and see, oh, by the way, does this person have a terrorist connection, for example, Jordan? You have to do that before they come to the United States for national security reasons. But the second reason, and you're probably the best position to talk about this, Jordan, it's for the people who actually are refugees and need safe harbor into the United States. Because if you don't follow the vetting process and the process is abused by people who do pose a national security threat to the United States, who does that cast suspicion on? It casts suspicion on the people who really are fleeing for their lives. We really do have an obligation to seek resettlement for them in the United States or elsewhere. Jordan, those are the people it hurts the most because it casts suspicion on the whole wide range of the group that has been evacuated. And again, this is a question that this week's hearing should absolutely focus on. It's not probably something that Secretary Austin could speak to as directly, but Secretary Blinken, Jordan, absolutely responsible for this.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we come back, we're going to take more of your phone calls. We'll get to Bob and then Mary Alice right off the bat. If you've got, again, a question you want to ask, if there's an issue, maybe something we haven't discussed yet, that you want Blinken to discuss today or tomorrow in these hearings on Capitol Hill, let us know. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Be a part of the broadcast. Also, we get back, we have got a case out of our office in Pakistan. You know, it's a good reminder as we talk about Afghanistan and also Pakistan's role. We have an affiliate in Pakistan that works primarily, of course, on those issues of Christian persecution. We've got another case here where a Christian has spent 4 years in prison for nothing, really. I mean, this even the prosecutor in Pakistan said it wasn't really blasphemy. So what are we doing about it at the ACLJ and our European Center for Law and Justice as we fight for the persecuted church in Pakistan? We'll get to that, too, when we come back. But we are focusing in on your thoughts, your calls, where you want the discussion to go and the questions to go today and tomorrow with Secretary Blinken as he appears under oath on Capitol Hill. We'll be right back on Seculo.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today aclj.org.
Now, welcome back to Secular. Just so you know about where things stand, too, with the vetting, that's one of the things I just would like focused on, because what we don't want to be doing is importing terrorists into our own country when we had a chance to stop it. Is that according to Washington Post and vetting reports, the U.S. has already flagged 44 evacuees as national security risk. So that's people that they already have caught that are national security risk. The question is, how many more? I mean, how many people are on this is just a question that needs to be asked. What was there no plan put in place, or did everything just fall apart? Just answer questions. Because why were we told that these Afghans need these special immigrant visas, so it's special paperwork? But what it appears is that if you got through that airport as things were crumbling, it didn't matter if you had that paperwork or not. And some of those people, yes, they went to third countries, but others went right to the United States. So if already 44 were flagged as national security risk, you've got to wonder how many more people. It's just part of the questioning that needs to happen. I want to go back to the phones, though, Logan. We'll start off with Bob.
Yeah, let's go to Bob in Wisconsin, line one. Bob, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing today?
We're good. Thanks, Bob.
Hey, I'm a former Black Hawk crew chief, and I know this question doesn't really apply for Blinken, but as you said, the military leadership is going to end up testifying before Congress. I want to know who is going to be held accountable for all of the classified equipment that is left on a Black Hawk helicopter. And China now has their fingers all over, and they can reverse engineer it. Are they going to take it at the upper levels of the military leadership, or are they going to drop a bomb on the heads of the brigade, battalion, and company-level commanders?
Well, it's an interesting question about where do they put the blame?
Yeah,
where does the military put the blame?
Secrets that would come in from all of
us. Just thank you for your service to our country. I thought you brought up an interesting aspect, which is it's not just re-engineering maybe a helicopter that's existed for decades in the U.S. and gets upgraded, but it's what it was upgraded with, Harry. That he hit on it specifically. It's not the fact that they can fly; it's that they have potentially classified technology on them, and we don't know that that was disabled.
Engineer our tech.
And we know the Chinese, if it's there, can do that. They're experts in stealing your proprietary information.
Bob raises a great point, because it's very, very possible that a Black Hawk helicopter would have sufficient classified information so that it could communicate directly in real time with, for instance, a drone or a drone commander for purposes of perhaps going after a terror threat or someone who poses a security threat to the United States. And apparently, China now has access to all of that information. And to answer Bob's question directly, and this reflects my skepticism, my own view is virtually no one in the Biden administration will take real responsibility. So no one will get fired. But at the end of the day, both Blinken, the defense secretary, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Milley, all of those individuals, they need to resign because they have basically failed the American people. They have failed their commander-in-chief, and they should have pushed back more vigorously when Biden decided to go down this disastrous road.
Oh, let's go back to the phones.
Yeah, continuing on, Mary Alice in California on line two. If you have a last second call, 1-800-684-3110 to try to get in. Mary Alice, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. My question is, what about these people, these private entities that are going into Afghanistan and they're trying to get these American citizens and these allies that helped us out, but the State Department is not allowing them to either take off or even land at any country around or even in the United States?
Let me go to Thanos. Than, because I think also, one, there's an answer could be given here because there's been an update. Some of the flights have been able to take off. Some of those efforts have been successful. And we might be down to a much lower number of Americans. That's something that Blinken can answer tomorrow, Than, is that One, are we still seeing the ability to get the Americans out? And what number are we at?
Yeah, I think he should answer the number, what number he thinks is left. How many of them want to get out? I mean, they've always sort of conveniently fallen back on this idea that a few are going to choose to stay. I'm sure that's true, Jordan, but that doesn't answer the question. How many are wanting to get out that you have not yet been able to extract? And look, to the point about private groups trying to get Americans or SIVs out, we know that is ongoing, Jordan. We have close proximity to some of those efforts. And I think he should be asked this question. Is there a different standard being applied to those charter flights than there was to the ones that the military was evacuating? Because, Jordan, again, this goes back to the security conversation. It is reasonable, it is rational, and it is actually appropriate for the State Department to make sure that there aren't national security threats on those flights. But, Jordan, if you're holding planes in country now when you were not doing it then, that doesn't seem appropriate to me. It would seem to me that if there were some validation of who's on board, they should go to an interim location, the vetting should finish, and then they should proceed from there. It looks to me, Jordan, like there's a different standard being applied now, and I think the secretary ought to be asked directly about it.
I want to get into a little bit about Pakistan, but Harry, just first, and Than as well, Logan, anything else you want to see asked today?
You know, I really would just like to see some true answers, some real responses from people, because I think that the American people are frustrated. And look, we're only about an hour out from when this is going to happen. I hope this gets some eyeballs on it. People can see whether the truth is coming out or whether you're going to have someone dodging, which is sometimes even more truthful.
To know whether or not the Biden administration is prepared to give the Taliban terrorists American money. And if so, how much? So is the Biden administration prepared to play ball with China, with Pakistan, and basically fund a terrorist organization? So to me, that is one of the more important questions.
Than?
I would like him to be asked what the Biden administration is prepared to do now and in the days ahead for the religious minority, including the Christian community, still on the ground, and for women and girls still in country. Jordan, we have got to look at history. We know exactly what the Taliban and, frankly, Al-Qaeda and other offshoots do to these groups of people. They might be behaving slightly better for now, but Jordan, we know. We don't have to guess how those groups will be treated. I want him to be asked directly what the Biden administration is prepared to do to protect those groups.
Just so you know, and folks, again, this hearing is about to begin. We'll cover it tomorrow. There's another hearing tomorrow. But I just want to spend this last minute of the broadcast. This is, for everybody watching, this is our submission to the United Nations on the situation out of Pakistan that our office there is working on. Just as a reminder to our supporters, our office in Pakistan is still very much functioning and working mostly in the criminal law realm because of the cases involve criminal charges brought against Christians. In this case, we were brought in to assist a Christian Pakistani who has been in prison for 4 years off of a blasphemy charge. The prosecutor in the case said it wasn't blasphemy. He was talking about a friend of a friend statement about someone's name that had nothing to do with religion. But he's been in prison for 4 years in Pakistan. And why we're bringing it to the attention of the UN is that when the judiciary there is about to make a decision, what we've seen in the past is that they don't, even when the prosecutor says, drop the case, he's not out of prison. He's still there in prison. And that the public pressure is so high to condemn people for blasphemy, to hold them, even if the evidence isn't there. And even if, of course, we believe these laws are wrong and unjust, but we have to fight within the system. So there's this concern that the judicial branches in Pakistan will buckle to that pressure. So we're bringing this to the international community's attention. There's information about it. We'll be up at aclj.org. We will talk to you tomorrow.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.